Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
It's graduation time, and with that in mind, we are going to devote most of this edition of On Your Money to covering the cost of college. Good morning, I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 22nd. It's a special college tuition edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will have some advice on saving for college and paying off debt, along with answers to your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, with offices in Madison and Eau Claire, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
So how are you on this fine day?
I am very well, and you?
I'm doing well. I watched my nephew. I'm very proud. My nephew graduated from UW-Madison Law School over the weekend. So,
oh, thank goodness. We were near crisis proportion on the number of attorneys in this country, and so to just add one more, I hope that he can share some of the burden that the other attorneys have been shouldering right now in terms of work.
That's what's so funny is because he has no job as an attorney right now and lots of student debt. So I'm hoping that we can give him some advice during this hour.
Yeah, it's very interesting that we've noted this a few months ago that some of those people, not him necessarily, but people in his shoes, law school graduates, have gone back and tried to launch class action lawsuits against the law school because they said, and this is not the University of Wisconsin necessarily, but others have said, hey, when you told me the employability statistics of graduates of your law school, you weren't completely forthcoming in how you assembled those numbers, and we feel misled, therefore we'd like some of our money back.
There we go. Well,
and the schools are surprised that they trained these lawyers really well in the law and then what they could do. And then when they were turned around and sued, they were shocked that this happened.
In any case, we'll talk, I'm sure, about student debt. I mean, lots of high school graduates are going to be planning for college. New college graduates are going to be trying to pay off that student debt. So where should we start, Kevin?
Well, let's start with that student debt load, because that's really the biggest issue. If you have enough cash to pay for college and you were fortunate enough to get out of school, whether it's a two-year school, four-year school, graduate school, or beyond, you're actually in pretty good shape. Even the most menial beginning jobs can pay for your living expenses while you still get started on your career. But the student debt load now is over $1 trillion, and that greatly exceeds credit card debt and all other kinds of consumer debt. About two-thirds of students who leave school have debt, and of that, the average balance is about $25,000. Now, that's a problem enough, but of course, they're entering into a very stagnant job market and not getting the jobs that are needed to repay those loans. So the short-term effects are these people are having a delay in starting their household, buying a home or getting an apartment, buying a car, getting married, having children. And, many of them are living off of their parents, which means their parents have to continue working so that they can continue to support these kids, which means they don't leave the workforce and therefore they don't open up jobs for these kids. So the longer term effects are that we're really going to start questioning both the cost and the benefit of what we think of as a traditional higher education. And it's already being booted around, of course, as a political football.
How so? How is it being booted around?
In its coming to a head in the form of subsidized Stafford loan interest rates. Currently, the interest rate on those is 3.4%. If there's any, not any change, they're scheduled to go back up to 6.8%. And to be fair, this is where the rates were before, but still, that's a pretty decent jump in the cost of borrowing, which the majority of students do have to borrow. The Obama and the Democrats want to leave it alone. Even the Republicans say, yeah, we'd like to leave this alone and leave it where it is, but we also want to be paid for it by gutting some other programs for it. The latest is it's still stuck in a stalemate. I think they'll probably extend it out like most of the other decisions that political people make, is that it'll be kicked down the road a little bit. But that said, it is a sign that there are some changes that are going to come in the way that we think about education and pay for it. And that's probably good.
Yeah. So who and how are we going to change?
Everybody. And again, let me say, when I talk about the debt and the cost of the college and going to college, it's still a really good idea to go to college and get a college education. Typically means about $400 in weekly earnings, more so than if the person were to just stop getting a formal education at high school. Plus, there are a lot more ancillary benefits on top of that college degree. Students, though, need to ask themselves, if you know that you are going to have $30,000 to $50,000 in debt, and you may or may not have a job, or you may have a job that's not the top of the salary range for this particular field, will you still go to school, and will you still go to that school? Schools need to decide how much more skin that they can add into the game. They can't just keep raising the tuition. I'd like to see them concentrate more on getting these kids through school on an affordable manner. Governments should use aid to cut costs, not to boost prices even further. And we as a society, we need to change our perception of what we think about a traditional notion of college, whether that's, you know, the paper chase or Animal House or whatever. You go to 4 years at this Ivy, you know, covered buildings, and then you graduate, get this piece of paper, and start your life. That can change in ways that maybe a little less romantic and maybe a little more practical.
Yeah. Well, this can be overwhelming, though, to so many people, Kevin, with the high costs of going to college and this low guarantee of employment.
Yeah, especially when, for both children and for parents, they're looking at this and saying, how are we going to do this? People with less resources and less intellect than you have somehow pushed their kids through college, gotten the degree, and gotten out, and still live to tell about it, so you can do it too. Even if we look at today and we say, well, it's going to cost about $80,000 in net cost for a four-year public school education. You can do that by, first of all, coming up hopefully with about $20,000 in savings, about $20,000 in income. Now, people say, where am I supposed to get that income from? Hey, your kid's not living with you anymore, and I bet he or she was costing you at least $400 a month while they were living with you, and food and other expenses. Now it's the university's responsibility to cover those expenses. If you get about $20,000 from student loans or earnings, even if it's all borrowed, a $20,000 student loan debt can be repaid by making payments of about $200 per month for 10 years. And finally, about $20,000 from parent borrowing. Even if they get that on a 30-year mortgage, which we're going to talk about a little later, that's about another $60 to $80 payment on top of their what they would otherwise be borrowing from their mortgage. So again, these are not good numbers, but they, when you break them down into smaller components, it's much more manageable.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. Well, we are talking a lot this hour about the cost of a college education and student debt and other related issues. If you have a different personal finance question for Kevin, that's invited to at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Well, let's continue now with this college tuition edition of On Your Money, and let's talk, Kevin, about what new parents and those who have young children should do when it comes to trying to pay for college.
the first step for parents in this situation? They'll feel like, oh, we haven't done enough. These kids are growing up so fast. And college, we know, we're smart enough to know that this is coming up. We hope it's coming up, but we're not quite sure where to start. Well, the first step is actually taking care of a problem that is the least likely to occur and be a problem, but it will be the most problematic for lots of reasons if it does happen. And that's what happens if one or both of the child's parents are not around to not only pay for college, but also pay for other living expenses and take care of the kids. So you want to set up wills, guardians, powers of attorney, and possibly a trust. And the reason the trust needs to be there is because you need to have lots of life insurance to pay for the cost of not only educating this child, but also maintaining his or her lifestyle. And the best way to do that is with term life insurance. Parents should have roughly 300 times their typical monthly expenses in the form of assets or term life insurance, and the term should last at least as long as they think the kids will be under their thumb. So if you're spending about $4,000 a month right now, you should try to get at least $1.2 million of money left to those kids. And you also need to have life insurance even on the stay-at-home parent, because it can be very expensive to cover the services that the stay-at-home parent provides. Best site to go to start looking for term life insurance, try not to get it at your employer, try to get it on your own, but go to termforsale.com. T-E-R-M, the number 4, and then sale.com, termforsale.com, and we'll have a link to that website up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Good. And what should be my priority, Kevin? Should it be my kids' education or my retirement?
Parents, the nature of having children means you obviously put your kids first at almost every juncture, but still, this is one case. It's kind of like when you're flying on an airplane, they say the oxygen mask will drop down. Put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then take care of your kid. You should do the same thing when saving for retirement first rather than college, because you can borrow money to go to college. You cannot borrow money to retire. And then if you do save enough money for retire and you do reach your goals, you can not only use that excess money to help pay for college, but help the kid pay off any student loans. You not only get a tax break on saving for retirement and a matching contribution maybe if you use the at-work plan, but as we've talked about before, Joy, you can also use Roth IRAs. The reason we like Roth IRAs so much, especially when it comes to saving for college, is you can pull the contributions back out whenever you want and use it to pay for college if you can afford to do so at the time. And balances that you accumulate in your own retirement accounts will generally not hurt financial aid need-based packages that you get down the road. And if you do try to save for retirement while you're sending your kid to college, that money that you're setting aside during those years actually will hurt any need-based financial aid that you might get.
Oh, well, so when should parents start saving in the child's name?
Rarely, if ever. It generally hurts need-based aid the most, and more importantly, it gives up control over the money. So if you put your money in your kid's social security number with an UTMA account, the kid can do whatever he or she wants with the money upon turning legal age. A better solution is to use those 529 college savings plans that we've talked about, especially if you've maxed out all of your retirement savings options, or if you're a grandparent and you want to save money for a grandchild. You can keep total ownership of the account and only award the money to the child if you decide to do so at the time. Another reason to look at these is philosophically, some people say, you know what, Kevin, I get all the issues of control, but I just like, it makes me feel better to have this particular jar filled with money for my particular child. Then the college savings plans are a good idea for that as well. You can go to savingforcollege.com if you want to look them over in general, or go to edvest.com if you want to see Wisconsin's plan.
Any other advice then for parents of younger children?
Keep building up cash. One of the biggest mistakes I see with parents of younger children who come to ask if they're in good shape or a good situation is they say, you know, we're really doing a great job because we're paying down all of our debt. And that's the exact wrong thing that they should do. Pay off the mortgage slower or even refinance it now to get a new 30-year mortgage with an 80% loan-to-value. Lower your payment, free up some cash. You should also borrow for big purchases, like if you need to buy a new car. The only reason to not do that is if you don't trust yourself to spend the money wisely or to save it otherwise. If you say, Kevin, if I put $30,000 in my checking account and then instead borrow money to buy a new car, I know I'll blow that money on that $30,000 on things I wish I wouldn't have. If that's the case, then pay cash for the car and be done with it.
We are talking about paying for college, paying off college debt, and other related issues during this edition of On Your Money. But we welcome your questions about the cost of a higher education and saving for it and paying for it. But if you have another personal finance question, that's welcome too. For certified financial planner Kevin McKinley, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love.
You're listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley, and we welcome your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up in just a bit, we'll have more advice from Kevin on saving for and paying for college, coming up of parents of teenagers, and then a little bit later, when the student goes to college. Our first caller for Kevin is Nate in West Bend. Hello, Nate.
Yes, hello. Kevin, my question is what to do with an extra approximately $1,400 per month that my wife and I realized by refinancing our mortgage and a home renovation project for our kitchen. I'm in my 50s. We both work and we have very little other debt.
What a deal. So you have an extra $1,400 a month that you want to know what to do with?
His recommendations as far as how best, what best to do with that money.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Sure. When's our next pledge drive, Joy?
No. Not until October, I think.
Okay, then we got some time. Okay, Nate, good for you. I strongly applaud. People should definitely be doing this now. Run, do not walk, into your nearest financial institution and refinance. Nate, are you and your wife fully invested in your 401k, meaning are you maxing out your at-work retirement plan contributions?
She is. I'm self-employed, and I would say that my contributions have been kind of minimal, about $3,000 a year in the last year.
Okay. If you look on line 43 of your 1040, you'll see a figure from 2011. And if that number is greater than $70,000 or so, and you think your situation will be similar for 2012, if you use that extra proceeds to put it into a pre-tax retirement savings plan, you'll save yourself about 25 to 30% of whatever you get into that plan this year. So let's say you put $10,000 this year into a pre-tax plan. You'll save yourself at least $2,000 and probably $3,000 in income taxes over what you would do if you weren't able to max out your contribution. And self-employed people, of course, are limited somewhat in your income based on, it's not a salary, so you don't have as predictable income, but you do have more retirement savings options than people who have just a job, who typically have just a 401k or a 403b. So I definitely look at a pre-tax retirement savings plan. You can also do just a tax-deductible IRA if you do qualify, and that alone, if you're over 50, can put $6,000 in there. You can even do it as a spousal contribution, perhaps on your wife's earnings, if you don't have enough from being a self-employed person. And that alone, the $6,000, again, will save you probably $1,200 to $1,800 in taxes on that contribution. You may also want to look at Roth IRAs because, you can pull those contributions back out whenever you want, but you don't get a tax break on it as well. And finally, Nate, you may just want to save it up for future expenses. I'm assuming there's a car that's going to need to be replaced. There are possible health care expenses down the road. There's a trip that you've been wanting to take but denying yourself because you're not quite sure if you can afford it.
Right.
Now might be a good time to look at taking that extra money and spending it. Again, wisely, don't go crazy, but you're probably reaching a point in your life, like most of the people with whom I work in my practice, where your time is at least as valuable to you as your money, and you may have more money left in your life than you have time. So if there are experiences you're looking to take care of and you feel like you can can afford it, do it. I mean, you know, most people don't die regretting that they should have spent less money or should have worked more. They die regretting experiences that they wanted to take and should have, but didn't. So start thinking about that with the money that you freed up for yourselves.
Okay, that sounds good. Sound advice.
All right, Nate, thank you very much, and enjoy. Let's go next to Jim in Winchester. Hello, Jim.
Good morning. Regarding the cost of higher education, there are an incredible number of parents and students who are making some poor choices when it comes to paying for their higher education. They're choosing very expensive colleges and universities when they could actually make a start that is much more economical. And in the end, they may end up with a better education. And it doesn't matter where one starts. It's where that sheepskin comes from. So if we're talking about people mostly in Wisconsin, places like the UW colleges are the least expensive for higher education start. Even the technical colleges now have articulation agreements with many of the four-year universities. So if a student wants to end up with a degree at UW-Madison, they don't need to incur the $9,000 plus for tuition at the start of their career. They can probably get, or at least arguably get, a better start at the UW colleges for about $4,500 a year. My mother taught me that in order to actually make money, you have to save money. So making the choice wisely at the beginning of a college education is exceptionally important when it comes to how much debt one's going to have at the end.
And which UW college do you work for, Jim? I'm just kidding.
Well, Jim, I want to say you have not been prompted. I did not tell you to call. I did not give you a script to read into the phone, did I?
No, but I used to work at UW Fox Valley. I'm just an old retired former administrator now.
Okay, yeah. You could not be more right, and I could not have said that better myself. It's amazing to me how many otherwise really bright, disciplined parents who make their 17-year-old child ask permission before downloading a 99-cent song basically let the kid decide how that kid is going to spend his or her next 4 or 5 or 6 years, and literally several $100,000 based on the whims of this teenager, which, quite frankly, most experts would admit this kid's brain isn't fully formed, and the kid definitely has to have some input and some commitment to the choice that education. The parents need to stop looking at this as price equaling prestige. In many cases, and we're going to find this, that Jim is going to be proven to be sage going forward, because people are going to look at this and say, you know what, the kid got a degree, he or she only has a few thousand dollars in debt, we didn't have to sacrifice our living expenses and hurt other kids and other things that we needed to get this done. We went to two-year school, and we're going to talk about some of the other solutions as well. But yeah, and especially, we're very fortunate to live in a state that has an excellent public education system, not just UW-Madison, which I'm a graduate of, and for my money is one of the goodest colleges in the country. But I think, you know, the two-year system, UW-Eau Claire, Whitewater, La Crosse, Oshkosh, you can go anywhere, get a really good education, and actually have some money when you're all said and done.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Jim, I had siblings that went to UW-Fox Valley. One of my brothers got an associate degree, I believe it was, in forestry, of all things. And he ended up going on getting a master's elsewhere. And it was a wonderful education.
And that man's name? Paul Bunyan. No.
Well, I started at UW Marathon County a long time ago, and I ended up with extremely low debt after graduating from UW Madison as an undergraduate. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the smart way to do things. And I think just more people are concerned about the name rather than the product.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's see, who's next? We have Chester in Athens. Hello, Chester.
Yes, I had a question, but I have a quick comment. I have two children in college now, and they go to four-year schools. There's something to be said for going to a four-year school rather than, I could have sent my children to Marathon County, lived at home, but they would have missed the four-year college experience. But my question for your guest is, when we apply for financial aid and so forth, we're offered subsidized and unsubsidized loans, and I'm wondering, would we be better off to turn down the unsubsidized loans and take money from our savings to pay for our children?
A great question and a good comment. There is something to be said for the experience, but there also is something to be said for the expense of the experience. We're going to get into this a little later, Chester, but yeah, I definitely have most families use the loans first because we don't know if the loans will always be there. We don't know at what interest rate they will be there. And you may need that cash not only for other college expenses if the loans aren't there, but also personal expenses as well. And if you get the kids all the way through school and your only cost is a few hundred or a few thousand dollars in interest and you've got all that money still left over, then great. But it's going to be very difficult going forward in some people's cases to get loans then versus now. And so I'd rather have you take what you can get now and then set the money aside either to pay the loans off in the future or to use it for other more urgent purchases.
Thank you very much, Chester, for the call. This is a special college tuition edition of On Your Money with financial planner Kevin McKinley. If you have a question for Kevin, be it on saving for college or something else, we welcome your personal finance question at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and we have an open line for you, which we will get to in just a few minutes. Let's talk about the second stage of saving for college and what should parents of teenagers do. Kevin, there is pressure to get in and pay for the dream school that seems to be starting to increase.
Yeah, and the tension between a teenager and a parent is palpable to begin with, and then you get issues about the kids, where the kid wants to go, not wanting to make the right choice. A lot of times kids don't care, but other times they care a little bit too much about it, about getting into the school and about staying in. The parents are not only facing the cost of the college, but trying to reasonably goad the kid into making the decision and trying to make a sensible decision. The parents are also facing retirement and their own job insecurity and other paying for other kids, healthcare, etc. So what you want to do is kick the can down the road, as we've mentioned. Max out your mortgage. Make sure that you're getting enough cash from this asset as you possibly can. Keep that cash on hand. Keep your credit score up because you will need it if you do choose to borrow money in the future. And then also start talking to the child, not just about where you want to go to school and what you want to study, but also the planning to say, hey, we're going to do this, but we're going to do this in the most cost-effective manner we possibly can.
Should the child be helping here?
Absolutely, and not necessarily financially, but by working on school as hard as possible, keeping their grades up, taking AP advanced placement courses whenever possible. Those credits are golden because they're earned while you're not incurring any extra rent and living expenses. Start taking some extra curricular activities that can help fill out the background. So if you are going to a school that judges your possibility of admission by those activities, you've got something to show for. And then I've seen this with some really bright students, very industrious kids, where they've said, you know what, I could go deliver pizzas, I could go flip burgers, but instead of doing that, I'm going to go to a website like FastWeb, and I'm going to spend 5 to 10 hours a week applying for scholarship. There's a lot of scholarship money out there that goes unused, but it's not just awarded to people the minute that you apply for college. You have to apply for the actual scholarship with the provider directly. And, getting $1,000 for a scholarship goes a long way. You'd have to work 100 hours at $10 an hour to offset that amount of money.
So the kids shouldn't work to help pay the bills.
It's the amount of time that it takes up for a kid to have a job. It's good experience. I worked from the age of 14. That may be enough evidence to preclude parents from wanting their kid to work. But it really doesn't lend a lot of economic value. I'd rather have them doing things with extracurricular activities or filling out scholarship. Again, it helps foster some responsibility. It's good experience, but the actual tangible amount of money earned from it isn't really that great.
So what do parents do if their child is a student who has a dream college that exceeds the budget?
It's time to have a tough conversation and say, we've added everything up. You know, we not only have you, but we have your siblings, or we're looking to retirement, or your dad's job isn't quite what it once was. So here's what we can afford. And a lot of times people will say, especially in Wisconsin, they'll say, you know what, you can go to La Crosse, Eau Claire, Whitewater, wherever, and get a really great education for $20,000 a year. So we'll pay for that amount. If you want to go someplace else that costs more than that, you are going to have to figure out a way to come up with the difference and get some skin in the game as well. And sometimes a kid will say, okay, that's fine, I don't want to go through that. Or they'll say, you know what, it's that important to me, I'm willing to go out and search for more aid, and I'm willing to take on more loans because I want to go to an outstate state school or a private school. And then finally, the parents should go to the kid and say, like Jim from Winchester said, let's look at some of the alternatives, like a two-year school. Is there a possibility of living at home at least for the first year or two and building up credits that way, and then transferring to a place where you can graduate from your dream school with that piece of paper? And then say, look, you're going to have to look at either an in-state school or possibly a private school, but one that's offering the best financial aid package and the lowest net cost, rather than, you know, has the prettiest buildings and a climbing wall.
So when should families start thinking about financial aid?
The sooner the better, and it's something they should start with, not end with, when the money all runs out. At a minimum, it should be January 1st of the kid's senior year in high school. That's when they should fill out the FAFSA form, FAFSA.ed.gov. That's the federal financial aid form. They're probably not going to get a bunch of grants and scholarships, but as we mentioned, they will get loan opportunities, and they should take the loans out first and use savings last. They should also fill out the FAFSA every single year that the kid is going to be in school, just to see what's out there and what the kid might qualify for, and then take out the loans every single year afterwards. This is, again, especially if you trust yourselves to keep any cash you have set aside to either pay the loans off or to use for other more urgent expenses.
This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, along with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Robert in Dubuque is with us next. Hello, Robert.
Hello. Hey, I'd like to just make a couple comments first and then my question. First off, as a UW-Madison grad, I agree with the other callers that the in-state schools and the amount of education that you're getting for your dollar is really a bargain, I think. And it seems like sometimes we choose to look for bargains all over the place and different things we do in cars, houses, et cetera, and then dismiss that when it comes to colleges and spend frivolously. Another comment is that for people that do have children looking at out-of-state colleges, rather than paying a higher out-of-state college tuition, one thing they could consider is letting their child move there, becoming a resident. I think it only takes, in most colleges, a year of residency, and then they can pay the in-state tuition, and they can be working and taking classes part-time in doing that.
That's a good point, Robert.
The other thing is I have two brand-new baby boys. Ooh. And we did they're 14 months old, so we did start a college savings, but I think like a lot of other parents, I have a question about, is there any data or any information out there on how much of your college should you pay for your children? Do you pay the full load for them? Do you make them earn a little bit? I worked my way through college, and I think I valued it a little more. So it seems like it's a tough decision from a parent's perspective of, do you want them to not have to worry about money as they're going through college and pay for it completely, or do you just pay a portion of it, make them take some debt so that they have some ownership in that?
That's a good question, Robert, and thank you for your points. The parents know their child better than anyone. And if you've got the kind of kid who says, I'm going to, you know, really bust my butt, work really hard, I'm going to enjoy college, but I'm there to learn, and I'm there to get an education and a diploma, then you want to remove any financial stress from that kid's life that you can. Sometimes it's just not possible. And by having, you know, either paying for school or having the kid get loans that can be paid down the road. But if you've got the kind of kid, and a lot of people have really bright kids, and they're just not quite as disciplined as the parents would like them to be, you might want to say, you know what, we'd like to see you kind of, like I said, get some skin in the game, show that you really value all the sacrifices that we've made for you in the past that we're making for you right now by borrowing some money. And the parents can even do that if they have the cash and say, well, let's see how interested you are in being a part of this. And keep the cash secret, and then if the kid graduates and gets through, you can say, okay, here's the money, go ahead and pay off your loan.
Yeah, and congratulations, Robert. This sounds like he has twin boys, double the pleasure, double the money.
Yeah, I hope they're twins. Yeah. I hope they're twins, because otherwise he's got a whole other set of problems that...
one other comment that I had is that what my parents did is they actually... didn't claim me for the last 2 years on their tax return, so I was considered an independent student, which allowed me to qualify for more financial aid. I don't know if you have any information or can comment if that's
That can be done. It's not as easy as it sounds, and many schools are wiser to that. And even then, the financial aid typically comes in the form of unsubsidized loans anyway, and so it's harder. You know, some schools will offer actual grants and scholarships to a student in that situation, but it's very rare, and there are a lot of other extra issues on top of it. So it's something I would look at, but I wouldn't look upon it as a panacea.
Well, we'll talk more about paying the bills for college in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
You're listening to On Your Money, a special college tuition edition of On Your Money, where we are spending most of the hour talking about saving for, investing for, paying for college. And we're welcoming your questions about that or any personal finance issue at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. So it is time now for stage three, when the student goes to college. And Kevin, where do we start when it's time to pay the bills?
Well, again, there's an order or a hierarchy, if you will, as to how those bills should be paid. The first money should come from student loans. Not only will the interest rates be subsidized, there may be no credit check, and federal loans may be forgivable down the road. Then parents should borrow the money in their name if they can, and then the money should come from income, whatever earnings that the parents have that can be set aside to cover the ongoing costs of going to college, and then finally use any cash and savings. As if the money is in a 529, a college savings account, you do have to use it in the year that the expenses are incurred, though, so you do want to liquidate that money by the kid's senior year in school.
Otherwise, why use savings last?
Well, again, like we mentioned with Chester, it's hard to get that cash back once you send it into the school if you do need it. And if you trust yourself and you're disciplined enough to set it aside and not blow it, you can always use that cash to pay off any loans that you or your student have incurred. Or you can use the cash when loans aren't available or the interest rates have gone up and it's too expensive to get. Or, again, if you use it for more urgent needs. A lot of times families run into some trouble and they say to the kid, hey, no offense, but your dad lost his job or your mom has some health care expenses. We're going to use your college money to cover that, and we'll worry about paying for your college cost down the road.
Well, you know, back in the day when I went to UW-Stevens Point, I did hold three part-time jobs down, you know, making sub sandwiches, working at a radio station, and something else I can't remember.
Were potatoes involved with any of this?
No, actually. Because it was Stevens Point, is that why you say potatoes?
Well, I know that you had some experience, I think, or at least you grew up in the area where potatoes figured in prominently.
They grow a lot of potatoes in central Wisconsin in Stevens Point. But, no, I was making sub sandwiches. But that's it's different these days, though, right, Kevin? We shouldn't expect our kids to be holding three part-time jobs trying to get a college education.
Well, partially the amount of money that kids get paid for these part-time jobs has not risen nearly as fast as the cost of going to college. Therefore, the value of getting a part-time job in paying for school expenses has gone way down relative to the cost. So, yes, it's good. I worked a lot and it was good for me and blah, blah, blah. But you're probably better off, unless the kid has a job that he or she's using to get more education about his or her prospective field. Like, let's say she's going to be a vet and she gets a job as an assistant in a veterinarian's office. That's a great part-time job for a college student. Right. But, you know, selling shots of Jägermeister at 3 a.m. in the morning, probably not what you'd really want your son or daughter to be doing. And then, again, the money is not there. The income from the kid's job will hurt need-based aid the most. And, again, the time spent on that job isn't going to get them any closer to getting the degree. And a fifth year of school at $20,000 becomes really expensive. Only about 56% of kids who enter school in September will have a piece of paper, a degree, 6 years after they first get into college. And part of that is because they have to work and they can't take as many credits. So I'd much rather see if it's possible for the kid to work less or not work at all, spend more time studying, take a bigger class load, and get out sooner and get better grades rather than, you know, add a few measly bucks into the overall kitty that they're going to spend on gas if they're delivering pizzas, or, you know, they'll be staying out till 2 o'clock in the morning with their coworkers or whatever. I'd just rather have them, you know, the college students, they should be students.
Two more of your calls now for Kevin McKinley, and our next caller is Valerie in Cross Plains. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, this is fun to be on the show. I love your show. I listen to it every week. And I have a little niece who's so sweet, and she's going to go to UT Austin in Texas. But she's going to come out of that with about $100,000 in loans, and she wants to do something like social work. So I'm concerned.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
She is sweet.
I'm so concerned about her financially, and I was wondering if how you find out about programs that where you can do like some kind of work after college that will reimburse you for some of your expenses. Like, I think there used to be some volunteer jobs like that, or Teach for America or something like that. That's my question.
We both kind of groaned and laughed when she said social work, Kevin.
I know. Mm-hmm. Bless her little heart, and she sounds like she's a wonderful person. But, yes, that is on the low end of the pay scale. I think the average salary right now is probably in the $25,000 to $30,000 starting salary, and $100,000 in student loans, if you're fortunate, is going to require a $1,000 payment per month just to get that debt retired by the time she's been out of school for 10 years. So I'd highly recommend, there are very few programs out there. They do exist. We're going to have a website on our website of the week that we'll talk a little bit about, that has a section on finding those programs. But even then, it's such a huge amount of money that it's very difficult for any organization to hire her, much less then also cover the cost of those student loans. So it sounds like she's following her heart, which, you know, every commencement speaker worth his or her tassel is giving that advice right now, but it's probably not the most pragmatic issue, and it's a lifetime decision, and I hope it works out for her.
Thank you very much, Valerie. Jaden in Dubuque is with us now. Hi, Jaden.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say one great part-time job, one that I hold, is the National Guard, and as a college student myself, I pay roughly $100 every semester in tuition, and the government picks up the rest. And also, as a veteran, I receive almost $1,000 every month for going to college. I know at these times it's tough, and it's something parents would need to try to really understand and talk to their kids about. But if, you know, your child is looking into that, it's a very great opportunity financially for college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jaden, great point. And thank you for your service, too. You deserve whatever you get, quite frankly, because, whether you're in Armed Forces, National Guard, whatever, there's a cost to that, but there should be a benefit to you for willing to serve your country like in that manner. And there are programs out there to do it. It's not just as easy as, oh, I'll sign up. You know, it's not the movie Stripes, where you just on a whim sign up and enlist in the service. But there are great programs out there that people should definitely consider if they don't see any other light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Thank you very much, Jaden, for the call. Dan in Delafield is with us. Hello, Dan.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Yes, what would you like to ask, Dan?
The speaker is a little bit off topic. The speaker had mentioned that it's a better deal to borrow for a major purchase, like a big vehicle or paying off your house. I'm wondering, is there some rate of return he's basing that on, or why that's a good thing?
Good question, Dan. Are you new to the show?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, the issue is so much. First of all, people who take the time and can sit through this stupid show are responsible enough people generally financially that I trust them to handle cash that they would have to use otherwise to either pay down their mortgage or use their loans. Most people's futures, especially if they have accumulated enough cash to pay off their car loan or to pay cash for a car or to pay off their mortgage, they're going to be responsible enough to use that cash. And their biggest pitfalls will come not from the cost of interest, especially on a low interest loan like a mortgage or a car or even a college loan. It will come from some unexpected event that always seems to happen to people at the worst possible time coming up, and they can't get access to cash. They can't borrow it. They don't have savings they can tap, or they don't have savings they can tap very easily. And so I'd much rather have people keep their situation fluid by saying, I can use this cash to help not only make the payments on the loan, but also pay off the loan down the road if I don't have any other needs, whether it's saving for retirement or helping a family member or paying for uncovered healthcare costs. Then they can always use the cash to then pay the loans off. But you know, generally, I'm a bigger fan of liquidity than I am of trying to reduce interest costs, especially in this highly unstable but very low interest rate environment.
Dan, hope that makes sense to you. Tom in Hill Point is with us now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Hey, my wife is a UW employee and previously funded a 403B plan and then started a 457 Wisconsin deferred compensation. And we are thinking of transferring the 403 balance to the 457 plan when she turns 59 and a half in 6 months. It's due to better investment options, and I'm wondering if Kevin knows of any downside to that before or in retirement.
No, there should be any downside to doing it all. And the big reason anyone should look at moving from one plan provider to another is the roster of investment options, and unless it's a self-directed account in which you can choose from, you know, 7,000 different investment options sometimes, and especially in 457 plans, you'll find less expensive, wider option. The 403Bs, I'm sorry, is she in education or healthcare?
Education.
Education. Okay, a lot of times the 403B plans in education are predicated upon annuities, insurance products, which certainly have their attributes, but you pay for those attributes in the form of much higher expenses than you might find in a 457 plan. So all the things being equal, have you checked to see if it is possible to move the money in?
Fidelity says it is, and will not charge us because it's under the umbrella of UW Wisconsin.
Yep, it's the deferred comp plan.
Moving to 457, yeah, Wisconsin deferred compensation.
Yep, yeah, I see no issues from that whatsoever, and I applaud you willing to take the pain and the hassle of going through that.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thanks very much. Very quickly, Lynn and Racine. Hello, Lynn.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm trying to check. My daughter just graduated from college. We'll just say that. And when I was looking for student loans, we went through the FAFSA, and they gave us the loan so that we could, because we had to do first year, and it was at 8%. So I went to the bank. I was crying because I'm like, 8%? How are these kids possibly supposed to be able to pay these loans back at 8%? And now they keep talking on television about a 3% loan. Where do you find a 3% loan?
Well, the rate on the subsidized student loans, these are generally need-based Stafford loans, is about 3.4%. But it wasn't always the case. It used to be 6.8% up until a few years ago, and that's probably the rate it will go back up to if they don't change the legislation and either change it permanently or more likely just, again, kick the can down the road for another year or two. So they are out there, but you have to qualify for it. You do have to fill out the FAFSA, and you have to have a income that's low enough to qualify for the subsidized rate. Most people don't qualify for it, though, so they're going to end up paying a higher rate for it that might be in the 6.8% range.
Good luck, Lynn, to you and to your daughter. Time now for the website of the week, Kevin.
One of the best sites out there for helping to pay for college is finaid.org, finaid.org. It's got information about loans, scholarships, financial aid calculators. The income-based repayment plan is in there. Their loan forgiveness programs for certain workers is in there as well. FinAid.org, and we'll have a link to that website up at our website, OnYourMoney.com, later on today.
Well, that sounds good. And, Kevin, I understand that you will be off next Tuesday from the show. I hope you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you very much, Joy. Same to you and to all the listeners. Thank you very much.
And there's time for four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He will be off next week, but returning the week after that for another edition of On Your Money. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.